Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And as is with live radio, we're having a little trouble getting a hold of our first guest, Michael Erb. He's a postdoc scholar of the School of Earth and Sustainability at Northern Arizona University, and he's going to be joining us to talk about a paper he helped co-author, a number of authors and scientists involved in this paper. Its full title, you ready for this, is Consistent Multi-Decadal Variability in Global Temperature Reconstructions and Simulations Over the Common Era. So there's quite a bit to unpack there.
There is. This is incredible to me, though, because, you know, we talked about how they looked at 2,000 years. In order to do that, they looked at over 700 different sources of data.
Yeah.
Which is just mind-blowing. The amount of data that went into this is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, and that's what makes this paper so unique, and that dozens of scientists from around the globe looked at data, like we say, using modern technology that we have. But, you know, what's interesting is that the modern technology, thermometers themselves, are only a couple hundred years old.
Right. That record is short.
So that's a very
relatively
short record. Exactly. This is looking at data going back 2,000 years, and he'll help explain why that's kind of defined as the common error that they use.
And the other thing that was interesting to me about this is they looked at it over a geographic distribution, which isn't usually something we hear as much about when we talk about, like, you know, the climate record ranging over such a long time period. So it wasn't just like, well, the average temperature on the Earth. It was like, well, you know, the Eastern Hemisphere, the Western Hemisphere, you know, this particular geographic region. And so we can kind of get a sense of the Earth as a whole and what some of these warm periods might have actually
right,
been.
Right, because as we said in the intro, there have been warming periods before. The two that I mentioned, the Roman warm period, which I think happened somewhere around years 200 to 250 or 300 AD, and the medieval warm period, which happened between the years 950 to 1250 AD. Hundreds of years. But what they've discovered using their research is that those are more regional in nature. And I'll explain just what that region entails, how much of that and how that compares to the warming we're experiencing now is more global in extent. The entire planet is experiencing warming to one degree or another. The Northern Hemisphere is warming at a faster rate with greater magnitude than, say, the Southern Hemisphere. But the entire planet is warming as we are experiencing now. So that's what we're going to be. Michael, are you there?
Hello, yes.
Perfect timing. We just finished talking about a local solar-based program, and we were about to go to break, but you showed up, and we're just going to launch into our
just
conversation
in the nick
with
of time.
You. Thank you so much for joining Nell and myself this morning on This Green Earth.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So we gave a little intro into the paper and the research that you helped contribute to. The title of the paper, again, Consistent Multi-Decadal Variability in Global Temperature Reconstructions and Simulations Over the Common Era. Admittedly, there's a lot to unpack there. So let's start here. What would you say is the general goals and objectives of this study?
Yeah, so basically the goal of this study was to better understand climate of the past 2,000 years. And understanding past climate allows us to place modern climate change into a longer context and gives us more data, basically just for studying the climate system. And over the past 2,000 years, climate has changed due to both human and natural forcings, and we wanted to better understand that. We also wanted to see how well climate models were simulating past changes.
Okay, so that 2,000-year envelope would be considered the common era, let's say?
Yeah, that's one name it goes by.
Okay.
It's just a period that we have a lot of good data for, a lot of good proxy data, we call it, from stuff like tree rings and ice cores and corals.
Okay.
So tell us more about that proxy data. I think, you know, we read that you used 700 different sources of data to create this 2,000-year record. Tell us a little bit more about what those data sources look like.
Yeah, so proxy data are really cool. So, yeah, there are things like tree rings and ice cores and lake and ocean sediments. Basically, they're anything that the climate has an impact on, and then we can take a measurement of it to get some information about what past climate is. Because, like, thermometers and barometers and all these instruments are great, but we only really have good data coverage from those sort of instruments about 150 years. So we rely on these proxy data to tell us more about climate before that. And for instance, I'll give you an example. Down in Antarctica and other places where they have ice, people take ice cores, and these are fantastic. So in places like Antarctica, snow builds up year after year, and eventually it gets compressed and turns into ice. And there's a ton of ice in Antarctica. There's actually about 2 miles of ice in places, which is incredible to me. And so scientists drill down into this ice, and in all that snow that's built up layer after year, they can take measurements about. They can take measurements about the isotopes and all sorts of things and the gas that's been trapped in little bubbles in there. And tell about how the climate system has been changing or not changing over this time period. And so for Antarctica, we can actually go back 800,000 years is our longest ice record so far.
So
This study, yeah, we started with about 700 different records. And first, for the main analysis, we only used a subset of those. We used the ones that best seem to reflect temperature changes over this time period, which ended up being about 250. And those are from all over the world, from every continent and ocean on Earth. And from there, we reconstructed how the climate's been changing over the past 2,000 years.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that proxy records, you know, are not thermometers, and we put a lot of faith in modern technology, like you say, thermometers and barometers. But proxy records actually go to places where thermometers couldn't be anyway, like the Antarctic or the Arctic or oceans or so. So proxy records are really interesting in their global reach.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay, so you looked at all that data. What would you say was the big takeaways, the big findings from this?
Yeah, so there were several major conclusions. So first, we can compare recent warming to climate changes over the past 2,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And recent warming over the past century is exceptional compared to this past change. And it highlights just what humans have been doing to the climate system through emission of greenhouse gases and other sorts of changes. And outside of recent changes, the study has some other interesting findings, too. One thing we wanted to study was how temperature due to natural fluctuations like volcanoes and solar forcing, what sort of impact that's had on the climate system. And for that, we looked at the period before the Industrial Revolution, before about 1800, before we really started having an impact, and said, okay, how much impact are volcanoes having and solar forcing and just natural variability too? And our big takeaway there was that over that time period, volcanoes were having the largest impact. Hmm. And they can actually cause a little bit of temporary global mean cooling,
mm-hmm.
because big volcanic eruptions, they spew all sorts of particulate matter into the atmosphere, and it blocks a little bit of sunlight. So a little bit less sunlight's getting to the ground, and it cools things down just a little bit.
So would you say that something like the Little Ice Age was a function of that?
There's evidence to suggest that.
Okay.
It might have been a combination of things.
Yeah.
But there are several large volcanoes right around that period, right around 1800, that definitely could have contributed to that.
We mentioned two periods in the introduction, the Roman Warm Period and the Medieval Warm Period. Can you talk a little bit about what their occurrences were, their length of time, but more importantly, their reach?
Yeah, so that hits more on a paper that colleagues and I did, another paper that came out at the same time, where they were looking at just how global in extent were these earlier climate variations, like the medieval warm period. And what they found was that a lot of these earlier warming periods weren't really global in extent. They mm-hmm. were definitely regional, but it's really only this recent warming that is truly global, that we see almost everywhere. But yeah, stuff like the Little Ice Age and the medieval warm period are interesting events because we have records that suggest, you know, that these are periods of a few hundred years which were a little warmer or a little colder than normal. And for instance, with the name Little Ice Age, you shouldn't picture an actual ice age with huge glaciers coming down over North America. It wasn't quite like that.
Right.
You know, it was a little cooler than normal. We have a lot of evidence to suggest that places like some northern hemisphere places got a little bit cooler, maybe affected some of the societies like Vikings that were around. But overall, it was a fairly little change compared to either recent warming or the even bigger stuff like the ice ages.
So were there any surprises once you aggregated all this data and looked at it? Was there anything that really kind of surprised the group of you that had been working on this?
Well, one nice thing to say was that we reconstructed the climate of the past 2,000 years, and we used 7 different methods. Because basically, we start with this proxy data, but there are uncertainties with it, you know, and there are, you know, we have more data from some places and less data from other places. So we start with this very interesting and very useful climate data set, but that's not perfectly complete. If we had complete data over this time period, this would be a really easy paper to write. We would just do an average, and that would be the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
But since we have a little bit of incomplete data, we have to use different techniques to try to compute a global mean. So we did 7 different methods, and one thing that was really nice to see was that regardless of what method you use, the answer was pretty much the same. That we see these volcanic cooling that maybe lasted a decade or two. We see this little ice age. And we see the pretty pronounced warming over the last 100 years. So especially for these volcanic forcings and for the natural variability, it was really nice to see that regardless of the method that we used, we got pretty much the same answer.
If you just joined us, we're speaking with Michael Erb. He's a postdoctoral scholar with the School of Earth and Sustainability at Northern Arizona University. We're talking about a paper that he was a co-author along with dozens and dozens of other scientists around the planet, basically, looking at comparing this global warming that we're experiencing now, this warming period we're experiencing now, with other warming and cooling periods in the past. I want to go back to the medieval warming period because that's the one that a lot of people who are, let's say, remain skeptical or denying that that we're going through a warming or it's human-based warming. They look at that and they say, well, see, the planet's warmed in the past, and we have this data, the proxy or otherwise, that shows that, you know, the planet warmed. But you're saying the medieval warming period was regional, and can you explain a little more what you mean by regional and basis?
Yeah. So, like I said, that's more the other paper that colleagues of mine worked on. We focused more on global mean changes.
Okay.
But yeah, just we have all these different proxy data from different places. And, you know, they've been collected at different points in time. And a lot of people focus on, you know, what do the proxies in this region or that region show? So yeah, with stuff like the medieval warm period, it seems to just affect part of the planet, probably less than half of it.
Mm.
And, you know, maybe 10 or 20 years ago, people talked a lot about the medieval warm period, but as we get more proxy data, it seems to be a bit less global in extent than we thought.
Mm.
And it's really only this recent warming over the past 100 years that seems to be extremely global, affecting pretty much all the planet, except maybe Antarctica, because that's a kind of a different sort of place. In that way, it's very exceptional compared to previous warmings that we've had. You're right that natural changes do occur. You know, the climate's affected by stuff like volcanoes, and certainly stuff like the ice ages was naturally driven, probably by changes in the Earth's orbit and different feedbacks in the climate system. But the recent warming we've had is different than that. We know what's causing it. We have great measurements of the temperature. We have great measurements of CO2 and other sorts of greenhouse gases. And we have a robust understanding of how the greenhouse effect works. So, yeah, there are certainly interesting periods of change in the past, but this period, the past 100 years, is definitely different.
So did this study include any kind of, like, new or different or developing sources of proxy data that hadn't been used before? Mm. Or are there others that you're looking at and moving forward that you would like to include as well?
Not too much that's new. So an interesting thing about proxy data is people have been taking proxy data for decades, for a long time. And recently, we've been really interested in organizing it all. You know, instead of just having somebody do their proxy data and make a paper about it and then publish the data at some particular location, we want to bring all of this data together and put it in a nice, easy-to-use format so that then we can conduct these big hundreds of proxy studies. So that's something that hasn't been done too much in the past, just this power of putting data into a good, consistent format that you can easily conduct statistical analysis of. So mostly we've been interested in just gathering all the data that's been developed already. And yeah, people are still developing data. People are still going out to Antarctica or out on cruises on boats to take ocean sediment cores. Or some colleagues of mine here at Northern Arizona University go out to lakes in Colorado and in Alaska to take cores from lakes. And so, yeah, data is being generated all the time, and we do hope to add more data to this database. We hope to make it kind of a consistent and growing database. But for this study, we were mostly concerned in just gathering all the good data that we already had.
And I wanted to mention something interesting with respect to the data and the paper as a whole. This is a paper that, if I understand it correctly, was submitted to Nature Geoscience in August of last year and was accepted for publication in May of this year. That speaks to kind of the rigorous professional review and vetting that papers that appear in Nature Geoscience go through. And that speaks to the integrity of this work. That was my comment
sure.
there. But you talk about like the seven different methods you use to evaluate data at one point. You know, you don't have to do that. You could do two or three. But you go the extra yards to look at seven. And that, again, that speaks to the integrity of the work that was being done with respect to this paper.
Absolutely. And yeah, that process of peer review, that's what we call it when a paper goes into, we submit a paper to a journal, and then it gets sent out to colleagues of ours, maybe people we don't know at all, and people that are anonymous to us. And they look at our science, and they, anonymously, they judge what we've done.
Mm-hmm.
And they write reviews for us that say, oh, you know, you haven't explained this well enough, or, you know, put some more detail here. Or, you know, if there is some mistake, and it does happen sometimes, they'll say, you know, maybe you should go back to that analysis and take another look at this.
Right.
And it is a fairly long process. It can easily last a year, where we have multiple rounds of reviews with people that are anonymous to us, and they're under no obligation to us. You know, if they think that we've made a mistake, or even if we just haven't written something too well or haven't explained something too well, they'll tell us.
Yeah.
And this is part of this process of making sure that really good science gets published.
So now that the paper is out there, what kind of response have you gotten to it?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. Hmm. We have colleagues in a number of different countries. This was a collaboration between 19 scientists in 8 different countries. And so, yeah, different news outlets in different countries have taken it up. A variety of news outlets here have written little articles about it. So, yeah, it's been really interesting. And also, this sort of outreach is really useful, you know, to get this science out to, you know, just people everywhere. Because fundamentally, the science that we're doing is to, you know, make the world a better place, as corny as that sounds. and it's for people.
Right.
You know, this work was funded in part by the National Science Foundation, so I'd like to thank them. But yeah, it's for the benefit of the United States and other places. And, you know, it should be discussed with people and made understandable.
Well, the paper is available at the website Nature Geoscience. Is it available elsewhere? There's a fee associated with that. But Michael, do you know if it's available elsewhere?
Well, yeah. So if you go to the normal website, yeah, you can read the abstract, I think.
Yes.
And yeah, it says there's a little fee to read the whole thing. And if I was in charge of the public industry, all these papers would be completely free to read.
Right.
You can get the paper if you contact myself or one of the other authors. It's a little wonky. You need a special link to get to the full paper.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you contact either myself or maybe we can post a link somewhere after the interview on your website, you're certainly free to read the entire paper. Because we want to make it get our science out there.
All right. Well, Michael.
Fantastic.
Thank you for doing that. Michael Erb, E-R-B, is a postdoctoral scholar with the School of Earth and Sustainability at Northern Arizona University. And again, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about this important paper and this important study.